from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. Glad that you're listening wherever you may be. Want to also remind you, as always, you can listen on 92.9 FM ESPN, 680 AM. But if you want to keep up to date, maybe you're going out of town, maybe you're out of range, you can always keep up with all the programming right here on 92.9 FM ESPN by downloading the Odyssey app. You can even use the rewind feature if you missed a segment. You can always stay up to date. My company this week is, of course, the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. He's on Twitter, on X, at CDunning929. Connor Dunning, good day, sir.
Great day, sir. Great day.
I do feel slightly bad when I read the breaking, when you get the Woj bomb and you see Zaire has been traded and you give an just an impulsive fist bump.
Yeah.
Like fist pump. Like I was like, he's not done anything. Like it hasn't worked, but it's not like he's been a bad soldier. Like I did find myself, I was like, does this make me a bad person? But it's like, it was my instant reaction.
Good kid.
Yeah.
Great move. Great move. Time to move on for the Grizzlies.
So we will get into that. Of course, the Grizzlies were in action last night. Zach Edey did return to the lineup, and then Zach Edey's summer league ended when he stepped on the foot of a pelican and rolled his other ankle. So at that point, you could kind of see, like, as soon as he went down and grabbed, you're like, and thus ends Zach Edey's summer league.
And of course he did, because this is the Memphis Grizzlies, and we can't have nice things for more than a few days. It was the most, because it happened live on the show, and I was so fired up because he had a great first quarter. I think he had 6 points, 3 of 3 from the field, 1 block, 3 rebounds. Then he comes in, and I had to get us back from break. Mm-hmm. And as it was, I was coming back from break, Gabe, the first thing he said was, it appears Zach Edey has rolled another ankle. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
How are y'all watching NBA TV?
I was watching on
phone.
GCM.
Oh, duh. Yeah, everything. So the Grizzlies do win. They are 4-0. I don't know if it's 100% decided, but it seems like mathematically it's about impossible for other teams to catch them. They will be either the two. They'll likely be the two seed in the Final Four this weekend. Or I don't know. What are we calling it?
The Final Four, I guess?
I have no idea.
Yeah, sure. Tell your story.
The Summer League play, whatever, playoffs. I have no idea.
The Spurs would have to have a crazy last game. They would have to win by like 50.
Yeah, and it's just really hard in Summer League to do that. Like, it's no one's good enough at scoring. It's shooting. So
I think they shut down Stephon Castle. I don't think he's playing. I think they've shut him down because I think he got hurt too.
I'm going to take your word for it. If Edie plays, I'm locked in. If the Grizzlies are playing without Edie, it's background. But I can safely tell you that I don't think I've watched any other summer league unless it was a situation like last night where I just left NBA TV on because I'd forgot to change the channel. And I think maybe the Kings. I feel like I've seen the Kings once or twice. So we'll get into everything that's happened Memphis Grizzlies because it's a little bit of a newsy day. We'll do all that here next. Then Blake Topmeyer is going to join us here about 2:35. SEC Media Days has finally ended. Probably, at least in my memory, one of the most non-consequential SEC Media Days. Like to me, the defining characteristic of SEC Media Days, like if I have to sum it up with one detail, the fact that the Lane Kiffin-Paul Feinbaum exchange was going viral yesterday when it happened on Monday.
Right.
That told you all you needed to know.
That was also clearly a bit, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
It's a word.
Because the most news that has come out of SEC Media Days this year is, one, Saban didn't pick Alabama and everybody lost their mind. When should he have picked Alabama anyway? You know, Georgia and Texas felt like pretty good picks for Saban to make. And then it's very clear that Sankey wants nothing to do with FSU right now.
Wants nothing to do with FSU publicly.
Publicly, sure.
Yes.
Sure.
I think that everyone is making it very clear publicly that they're not. Everyone feels very afraid of a lawsuit of pursuing Florida State.
He continuously says litigation.
Correct.
And that tells you all you need to know.
Yes. That is where his mind is at. So we'll do that. We'll get into the list to start hour number two. The Open Championship going on. Tiger's likely to miss the cut. Rory hit a ball 5 feet. It was awesome. This tournament has low-key rocked. It is so hard out there. The wind is howling, and these guys just look lost at times. So it's been a fun tournament. Team USA will return to, I don't even know what we're calling it, warm-ups, tune-ups?
They're calling it a showcase.
Showcase.
It's the showcase.
The Abu Dhabi showcase.
Yes.
Yes.
Come watch us beat the hell out of some teams.
Yes. Yes. In a country that probably doesn't have great human rights records. Kevin Durant likely to return. We'll talk about that. We also got the preseason SEC first team, second team, third team, order of finish. Also, there is a sporting event this weekend in a mall, and I'd like to talk about that. We've also got to talk about now the NBA on TNT might be back.
Right. They may match, but have you heard that Warner Bros. Might split up? And the idea of it is possibly HBO and Discovery, like it used to be. It's driving me absolutely insane how they are doing this.
Okay, so we got to get into it because there's a couple other like societal things that I want to talk about as it pertains to this, and really more like how we handle news now. So we'll discuss that. We'll get into games of the weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I think let's start first. Where do you want to start? You want to start with the trade, or you want to start with Edie?
Let's start with Edie because it happened first.
All right, that's good because that's probably where I want to start. So Zach Edey does return to the lineup. I'm like you. I thought he looked solid. I will say at times, if you're someone that wanted to be critical of Edey, there were a couple of times where I thought foot speed may have, like...
Macy got him a couple times, 100%.
And I just think that's going to be part of it.
Right.
Like, he's not a perfect basketball player. But overall, very solid. The first thing, though, before we get to the whole injury thing, Chris Harrington pointed this out, and I think he's exactly right. Actually, I saw when Penny was asked about, when he was on Shaq's podcast, and he was talking about the whole Edie thing and talking about passing, Zach gets screwed because guys can't get him the ball. Like, there were multiple times he had a phenomenal roll to the basket. And it's like, guys don't know how to make entry passes anymore.
No, they definitely don't. And we saw it a lot in the first game when he was playing Walker Kessler, where he was able to seal him off a few times. And Scotty would throw Edie the ball, and he would position himself, and Edie would throw it back. Because in college, the Purdue guys would throw it immediately back to Edie because the offense was running through him. I think that what we're seeing, though, is that in summer league, these guards are trying to get theirs. They're trying to fill up the basket. They're trying to show what they can do on the offensive end. So they're not as inclined to throw it back into Edie. I do think when he is playing with somebody like John Morant, they will probably figure out how to use him on the offensive end a little bit more than he was being used during the summer league. I think we also need to talk about they only got one game together. So it was an adjustment not only for Edie but for those guards. So I think moving forward, and you even saw it in the first couple of minutes of the game that he played yesterday, they threw him the ball down low and let him go to work a couple of times. So I do think that there was going to be an emphasis on trying to get Edie the basketball in the paint, but it's going to be an adjustment period for him and the guards that he's going to be playing with, because it's just the game of basketball has evolved in a way to where you're not running an offense through a traditional big. If you're running your offense through a big, it's more like a guy like Jokic. It's not a guy like Edie. So it's just going to be an adjustment period for the guards and Zach Edey, because he's got to get used to, yes, you may be sealing these guys off, but you're not going to get the ball every single time.
No, but to me, like it's maybe not even like just traditional, like post them up. There's been rolls to the basket, and it's like, guys, he's open.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, but I think you are right. I mean, there's obviously always going to be competing interests. This is not, it's not as simple as everybody's out there to win the game and whatnot. But there's no getting around it. When he rolls his ankle, it sucks.
It sucked. It was a huge bummer. Huge bummer.
I guess, though, like, I am wondering this, though. Because, you know, whenever, let's all acknowledge, like, let's talk it out. Let's be honest. We all have PTSD from last season.
100%.
It's any time. We just have injury PTSD. I do find myself wondering if part of him being an Iron Man at Purdue, because I believe the stat, I don't think he ever missed a game for injury at Purdue.
If he did, it was very few. For some reason, the number 6 is jumping in my head. Like, maybe he only missed 6 games, but maybe that's because the 6 is jumping in my head because he's only been playing for 6 years.
He never had a significant injury.
Correct.
I do find myself wondering, though, is that because, like, you know, they played slower and, like, now that you get the game, because if he's, like, both, to me, both injuries were kind of, like, up and down, like, when the games, it was pace of the game.
Right.
I'm just saying, I'm not saying that this is, like, some type of flaw, but that's where my brain went last night.
The first one, I think we may be able to put into that bucket a little bit more. Yesterday's was just
unfortunate.
Well, he was being more aggressive on the defensive end, which they have talked about. He's going to have more aggression than he did at Purdue because they're not super worried about him fouling as much as Purdue was, because if he fouled out for Purdue, they were screwed. They were dead in the water. Yesterday, he went to try to make a play, and a tiny guy, which I guess everybody's tiny compared to Zach Edey, just slid underneath him. Like, he had nowhere to land. It was a freak accident. And that's why sometimes S just happens.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, just a lot of S has been happening to the Grizzlies. And that's why my hope is maybe this is the last bit of just bad karma that we're getting out. Get it out in summer league. Get it out in summer league now. Also, you know, he is now a Memphis Grizzly. He has been christened a Memphis Grizzly for having two injuries and back-to-back games.
No, well, I think Mark had a tweet last night. Like, you're not officially
you're not a Grizzly until you've had a freak accident. Because I also want to remind people, Ja had knee surgery his rookie season, before his rookie season. Remember, he had a cleanup of his knee, which sounds a lot worse than a rolled ankle. So I expect them just to wrap Zach Edey up in bubble wrap, and we're not going to see him again until the preseason, and I'm perfectly fine with that.
No, I mean, that is, I would, even if they haven't said it, I would, if we saw Zach Edey again in summer league, I would truly be surprised.
I don't think we're going to get the probable to return.
Correct. This time he might be shut down, and, like, you get it.
Right.
We are now at the point, also I feel like we're at the point where, like, summer league is officially, like, gotten kind of too long. Like, now you're like, all right. Like,
well, it's gotten to the point now to where there's really nothing else to show. Yeah. Like, the guys for the Grizzlies specifically, they've all shown what we need to see. There's nothing new that I'm wanting to see. And that's why last night was such a bummer, because before we get off topic, the Misi matchup for Edie was going to be really interesting to see, because yes, he had great success against Walker Kessler, and the reason that was exciting is that Walker Kessler is a third year big. He's bona fide, played for Team USA, second in blocks per game last year, rookie all team, all that stuff, a bona fide NBA starting
big. He's a legitimate NBA player.
He's also a brooding big, you know what I mean? He's a 7-footer. He doesn't have great foot speed. And last night it was interesting because Misi, he did mess with Edie a little bit on the defensive end of the basketball. Like, he got past him a few times. He had a couple putback dunks. So I was going to be really excited to see how Edie adjusted to that type of game speed. Because the one thing that I just never agreed with people when they said shut him down after the first game was I wanted to see him one more time. Because I wanted to see him have a different look against a different big. Because Misi is just such a different big than Walker Kessler. And we did see a few moments in the first quarter, even though he only played 8 minutes and 35 seconds or something like that, there were still a couple of moments where you were like, oh, there's the foot speed thing. It's going to come up a few times. But at the end of the day, if he can be as efficient as he was on the offensive end, protect, you know, or grab boards and protect the rim, that's going to be perfectly fine.
Yeah, so overall, it stinks. But I don't think either one of us are particularly
concerned. There's no reason for panic. Yeah,
it feels like it's a bummer. I mean, I wanted to see him only because this is a different type of system than he's going to play in. I'd rather him have reps. But now you've just reached the point where it's like there's no point. There is. I do not care enough about a summer league championship.
I would be worried about the injury more if he didn't walk off the court. And he seemed
seemed
frustrated. He walked off, and you know, everybody, Jessica Benson tweeted it out. He basically said, F man, I just want to be playing. And like that's a good sign where he's like, this just sucks. You know what I mean? If he had to be helped to the locker room, I would have some worry, but at the end of the day, I think it's just a freak accident. A tiny guard slid underneath him and he landed on his foot. It happens.
Yeah, our official spin zone will be we are paying it forward with injuries.
Yes, exactly.
We're getting them out of the way early.
We're fixing our karma.
All right, and then this happened, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes before the show. Maybe around one.
About an hour.
Yeah, about an hour before the show, you're right, because I have not left the house yet. We get the news that indeed Zaire has been traded. And the details are as follows from Adrian Wojnarowski, of course, team spokesman for the Memphis Grizzlies. The Memphis Grizzlies have traded forward Zaire Williams, a 2021 top 10 draft pick, to the Brooklyn Nets. I believe Connor called that exactly. Sources told ESPN on Friday. Williams goes to the Nets with a conditional with a 2030 second round pick via the Dallas Mavericks We looked it up before. We wanted to be Mamadi Diakate.
Diakate.
Did I get Mamadi right?
I believe so.
Okay. Mamadi Diakate. He played at UVA. And the draft rights to Serbian Nemanja Dangubic?
Sure. We're never going to need to say it again. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter.
Oh, Marco played in that Serbia game the other night.
He did.
I was like,
the chess thing with LeBron. Yeah, Grizzlies legend.
He was the 54th pick in the 2014 draft. So he hasn't come over in 10 years. I think it's safe to say this was some type of paper acquisition. Like, this was something that had to be included on paper to make the thing work.
I thought it was a typo at first. I genuinely thought it was a typo, and I just assumed it was some guy that got taken in this year's draft that I wasn't paying attention to. And then I was like, oh, no, this is 2014. Honestly, great bit. Great bit by Kleiman. Very funny.
The deal moves out $6.1 million guaranteed on Williams' contract for the 24-25 season and creates some more salary cap flexibility as the Grizzlies work to re-signing guard Luke Kennard. And that is the detail, folks, that matters. Yes, I think the Grizzlies would have liked to have moved on from Zaire at the deadline.
Right.
But they couldn't do it. And you saw what had to happen. This isn't attaching, you know, a significant asset. But the Grizzlies had to tack on stuff to get rid of him.
Absolutely. He had negative trade value. It's very clear that that's what happened, and they've been trying to get off of him since the deadline. And that's why when the delay started happening with Luke Kennard, the only logical thing that was going on was that they were trying to get rid of Zaire Williams to get under the tax and to clear up his spot to bring in Luke Kennard so that you could sign him on a more team-friendly deal. And it appears that that's exactly what happened. And to be quite honest, I thought they were going to have to give up more. Like, I thought they were going to have to attach more to Zaire Williams because he's been such a negative player in the NBA so far in his career. Yes, I pinpointed Brooklyn a long time ago. I'm pretty sure, like, around the deadline last year, I was like, the team that they will trade him to is Brooklyn because they are trying to capture the flag. They are trying to tank for Cooper Flagg next year. And, you know, no offense to Zaire, but he helps you lose games. It's not like he's going to go in there and change their trajectory and all of a sudden they become a winning team. He's going to help them. And I do think that Brooklyn is a good spot for him to maybe develop more. He just needs opportunity. And that opportunity was not going to come with the Memphis Grizzlies. At the end of the day, he had many years here to try to get something going. And the only time he had success, I'm not going to pretend like he never had success because he did, but it was sparingly. It was few and far between. And it usually had to be with guys like John Morant and Steven Adams on the court. And to be honest, he just wasn't going to have that role this year if he was going to play at all. And I think that he's been passed. Vince Williams showed up. G.G. Jackson showed up. Jake LaRavia actually looks like he might be an NBA player during the summer league. I think that it was detrimental to Zaire Williams for him not to play summer league last year. And then he couldn't get healthy. So it just didn't work out for the kid here in Memphis. I wish him the best in Brooklyn. But to be quite honest, this is a good move for the Memphis Grizzlies. And I'm happy that they did it now. Because now we can move forward and we can all kind of admit now, okay, that draft didn't work out. We can put it behind us and we can just move on from it now. The sins of that draft are gone. And to be honest, I think that they've been healed a bit from the G.G. Jackson pick.
No, there's no question if the Grizzlies don't have Vince Williams and G.G. Jackson come on in the fashion that they are, this feels like it's more significant. And, like, on a certain level, I kind of feel a little bad for him because it does feel like his best basketball is when he's on the floor with Ja.
Right.
But the problem that I see is exactly what you just laid out there. There's other guys that I think deserve to be on the floor more.
Right.
And so it's one of those ones where you kind of chalk it up to it's the weird COVID draft. They couldn't meet with the guys in the summer. Like, that. When you go and you look at that draft in general, outside of, like, Ant, it's kind of a real mixed bag.
Well, and the picks around Z, too, weren't great.
No.
Like, some of the guys that got taken after he was haven't worked out. I mean, Moody's been okay. But the truth of the matter is, for that draft, the Grizzlies traded up. They wanted to get Franz Wagner or Josh Giddey, and both of those guys were gone. You said before the show that maybe they were trying to get Kuminga, too. I would believe all three of those things. They took a swing on Zaire when they probably shouldn't have. They doubled down on youth when they didn't need to. And at the end of the day, they wanted him to produce in a way that he was not ready to. The Grizzlies are looking for wing players that can come in and impact winning. You have got to either be able to hit a three-point shot consistently, or you have to be a plus on the defensive end. And right now, he's neither of those things. So when he's in Brooklyn, he might have some time to develop because they're not trying to win basketball games. It doesn't matter if he goes out there and has negative minutes. It mattered when he was a Memphis Grizzly. So now he has the freedom to go out there and experiment and maybe gain some confidence. Because I think that's another thing that happened last year. You watched his confidence in real time just disappear from his game. If he wasn't out there with Ja, it was like he didn't really know where to be on the court.
Yeah, because it's like his whole game's just rim running.
Right, or lob catching, yeah.
And the reality is, like, if he wasn't going to be a plus three-point shooter, like, that is what this team needs.
Right.
So now there's another question. The question will be, are the Grizzlies going to – I don't have any inclination. I haven't seen anything yet. Do we know whether or not they are keeping Diakite?
It appears – I don't know. I could see them waving him. At the same time, though, we've all kind of discovered that he's a big – so maybe the idea of it is you keep him on the roster as your big for now because he's only guaranteed $1.39 million next year. So until something else presents itself, maybe you keep him on the roster. I know an idea that a lot of people are having now is, okay, great. You got rid of Z, re-sign Luke Kennard for a team-friendly deal, and then convert Scotty or Cam. That a lot of people are wanting them to convert Scotty and Cam right now. But I say hold pause on that for now because you don't have to do it right now. If you want to do that at the deadline, you can do it at the deadline, and you can just waive Diakite and bring in Scotty Pippen Jr. when you need to. But there's no reason to do it right now.
Yeah.
It's very similar to Vince and Gigi last year.
Honestly,
it's almost the same conversation.
I would be totally fine if they want to keep Diakite and you find out, okay, is this like an extra big, whatnot,
right.
See what you got. Like, that's fine by me. If they want to release him and keep an open roster spot,
fine by me.
Totally makes sense. What does not make sense to me is converting Scotty. Let's be real. It's Scotty.
It's Scotty. It's Scotty.
Don't get me wrong. He has been way better, I think, than you could have reasonably expected.
He's awesome.
When you signed him basically off the street.
Yes. Thank you, Lakers.
But there's no point in actually converting him yet.
No.
You don't have to do that.
No.
And if you get into a position where you do have to do it, I would think you would want the flexibility to do so. But there's no, to me, like, that's one thing that does not make sense to me. Why would you do that when you don't have to?
Right. It is, again, it is the PTSD and mind warp of last season. What it has done to the minds of Grizzlies fans and those who follow them and cover them. We think that the guys 13 through 15 really matter, when in reality, if they matter again this year, something very bad has happened.
No, you don't want them to matter.
Right. I understand maybe wanting Scotty for the playoff run that they will probably be on, because you want to give Ja 5 minutes of rest during games or so.
Well, and obviously he would have to be converted to be in the playoff.
Right, and I just have doubts that Derrick Rose is going to be able to really give you much. But I think that we're all in agreement that Rose is going to play the UD role. He's going to play Udonis Haslem this year. That's what he's going to be, and I'm perfectly fine with it, because I think that Derrick Rose's impact on the team matters. The players respect him, and I do think it's a positive impact that he's there. And again, he's making no money whatsoever. He might be able to give you some games, but at the end of the day, it's just they'll be able to do the backup point guard position by committee. Marcus Smart will be able to run it. And John Morant's going to play, what, 32, 35 minutes a game?
Likely. I mean, that's kind of what we've been seeing is, let's see, I think Jaren went up. Like, Jaren played his most minutes per game this year. I want to say it was like 34 and a half.
It's so hard to apply anything from last year, though, to this upcoming season. It's so difficult because Jaren's role was so elevated from what it will probably be. The playing time may stay present, but what he was actually doing, it was exciting because it did feel like he added a few things to his bag, but his role will be different next year just because Ja and Bane are going to be back healthy.
So in the 9 games he played, he averaged 35, but that is also kind of that's a little bit misleading, because remember, like, some of those games were tight and they just decided, like, screw it.
Right.
Like, we're playing Ja. I suspect they're still going to have a 10-man rotation.
One of them was an overtime game, too.
Yeah, I suspect that you're going to see something. I mean, we got 31 his first year, 32.6 his second year, 33, 31.9, somewhere in between 32 and 34.
It looks like, I went back and looked, it appeared that he may have had a 35-minute cap on him, and then a few games that they thought that they could win, they just let him float over by a couple of minutes.
Yeah, the New Orleans game.
The New Orleans game, he played 40 because it was overtime.
Yeah.
But other than that, the only two games he went over 35 minutes were the Clippers game that was close and he played 37, and then the win over Atlanta, he played 36. Everything else was 35 or under.
Okay, what other questions do you have?
Questions that I have. What do you think Luke Kennard's going to get?
All right, so my gut says if it's 2 years, my gut says like 2 years, 20.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you tell me it's 3 years, I could buy that it's 3 at 27.
Which would you prefer?
I'm kind of neither here nor there.
I think I would prefer 220.
I think if you made me guess, it would be 2 at 20.
Because you can move that one, too. Like, let's say it goes wrong. You can move that.
Well,
that's a movable contract.
I think the other part of it is they would like to not commit beyond 2 years, because after 2 years, you're going to have to figure out how to pay Jaren, because Jaren's
big deal. That's where I wanted to go next. I don't understand this mindset that the Grizzlies are cheap because they're dodging the tax here. To me, it appears that they are getting ready for future moves. They understand that they're going to have to pay Jaren Jackson Jr. You're not going to get him on a team-friendly deal again. He is much improved and now a defensive player of the year. You're going to have to pay him. They are getting ready for that deal. We've got to stop looking at things as right now moves. Some of the money moves that they are doing is to get ready for the future. It's this whole, the Grizzlies are cheap and they're dodging the tax and the apron stuff. I'm like, if you can do that and maintain flexibility, isn't that what you want to do, especially with the type of roster that they have built?
I guess my whole deal is like, yeah, I don't.
What else would they be doing?
I kind of want them dodging the
like,
apron.
Yeah.
Well, like, to me, it's a completely different calculus. If you have, like, the Boston Celtics not caring, fine, I get that. They've got their roster.
Right.
Like, it's in place. They've got their roster. If they don't care, so be it. I mean, we would agree, even if they don't win a title, it seems like what, the worst they will be is an Eastern Conference finalist?
The Celtics?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So what does it matter to them if they drop from picking 27th to picking 30th? Like, what does that matter? But if you're the Grizzlies and just giving up assets when you're a small market team, like, that doesn't make sense to me when you do not have a proven championship roster.
Right.
You need, like, you're going to, it's... This kind of all speaks to when you made the point that now only six guys remain from what was the last playoff team.
3 years ago.
The last playoff team. Only six guys remain. Well, I think part of that's going to be the core is obviously going to be Jaren, Ja, Dez, and then you're going to kind of be rotating and you're going to be mixing and matching
it's around the margins.
That. Yes.
And that's why it's such a big deal. And that's why, like, you hope that Edie works out because he's cost-controlled, and that's going to be your big for a few years. G.G. Jackson, he's cost-controlled. He's going to be one of your wings for a few years. Vince Williams Jr., he's cost-controlled, and he's going to be one of your wings for a few years. Marcus Smart, that'll be, you know, that deal, not too bad. Luke Kennard, team-friendly deal. Brandon Clark, team-friendly deal. Santi Adame, team-friendly deal. They are having to work around the margins, and to be quite honest, I think that they've done a pretty damn good job at it. Like, right now, I would say that the Grizzlies should probably finish somewhere between 3 and 5 in the West, and that gives them a shot. And next year, I want them to have a shot. I want them to be able to contend. I don't necessarily expect them to win a championship next year, but they've got to start moving in the right direction. And I think that this type of move allows them to continue to move in that right direction. Because I've also seen this argument that Luke Kennard's not an asset. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. We've seen the numbers when he plays with Ja Morant and Jaren. The numbers are really good. Yes, he's not a plus defender, but he's not in there to play defense. You're not asking Luke Kennard to go in there and play defense. You're asking Luke Kennard to go in there and shoot 45-plus percent from three, and when you put him next to Desmond Bane, the floor spacing is going to be amazing for a guy like Ja Morant. He makes the Grizzlies better, period.
How can someone reasonably say he's not an asset?
I don't know.
There is... one other proven shooter on the roster.
Yeah.
One.
You could argue Jaren maybe a third, but it's not the same.
But I mean, Jaren, it's like, it always just feels streaky.
They leave Jaren open still. They make him hit a few before they start respecting the shot. And that's nothing against Jaren. I think he's a really good three-point shooter for his size. He can help space the floor. But Bane and Kennard, you have to keep somebody on them. You cannot leave them open. And I think that they're going to be really valuable when you have a screen setter like Zach Edey on the team already, because Ja's going to get a lot of straight-line drives to the basket. And they're going to have to decide, am I going to help off of Bane and Luke Kennard, or am I going to get out of the way of Ja Morant? That's going to be the decision that they have to make. And I want them to make that decision because it's two excellent three-point shooters. They were literally the two best three-point shooters in the league when they both played a full season 2 years ago. We had the top two. That's a good thing.
I mean, I think it's like when you do the cumulative of active players, I think they're 1 and 2.
We also just watched a playoff where three-point shooting swung a lot of games. Well, ask the Dallas Mavericks if three-point shooting matters.
I mean, to me, the other big issue is when everyone talks about half-court offense, half-court offense, half-court offense, it's like usually what that means is shot-making. And that's a big part of it.
I also think that the Grizzlies have enough defensive pedigree with the guys on the roster right now to where I'm just not that worried about somebody who may be looked at as a minus defender. I'm just not that worried about it. Your job is going to be to come in and hit three-point shots. The same people that are complaining about Luke Kennard wanted a guy like Buddy Hield. It's not like Buddy Hield was giving you anything on the defensive end.
I don't understand that. I mean, to me at least,
he makes the team better, period.
And I've always felt like Luke is one of those guys where he kind of fits into the category with Dame. I'm not someone that's willing to just sit there and go man, the Bucks were so stupid. It didn't work because they got hurt, but they were testing their premise, their hypothesis was we have struggled in the playoffs because we don't have a shot maker, late shot clock, and now everyone just does hacky Giannis. And Giannis, it's a 50-50 proposition. And so they brought him in for the playoffs, and we didn't really get to see it. And when Dame was in the playoff series, he was really good. He just got hurt, and then Giannis didn't play.
And Chris Middleton his body is crumbling before our eyes.
Yeah, I mean,
he had both of his ankles had surgery this offseason.
That was what I laughed at. He had arthroscopic surgery on both ankles.
Both.
That was something. Anything else before we take a break and get to Blake?
If you had to choose what they did with that final roster spot, what would it be?
Hold it.
Yeah. Open. So get rid of Diakite.
I mean, if they want to keep him and then figure out and waive him, whatever. But I want that flexible.
Do you think the play of Trey Jemison recently will impact this decision? Because I was not a Jemison guy last year. I have become one during this summer league.
I don't think anything summer league's changing there.
Well, I guess I've become one in the sense that I'm if he's your fifth big on a two-way I'm fine with it.
Yeah, that's kind of
because
where
again, if he matters, something else happened that was really bad.
I'm fine with him being the fifth pick. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Blake Topmeyer joins the program. Let's talk some SEC Media Days and more. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
On Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, I said at the start of the show, I think if I had to define this week of Media Days with one detail, I think I would say the fact that the Lane Kiffin-Paul Feinbaum exchange was going viral on Thursday when it happened on Monday, that told me all I needed to know.
Well, yeah, the event is past its prime, long past its prime. I don't know. Did you talk to anybody this week who actually watched SEC Media Days on television? I'm not talking about like the social media clips that, you know, inevitably come out of this event, but I want to know how many people.
Does Cobb count?
Yeah, I guess he counts. Did he sit around and watch?
He said it was his background noise.
Oh boy!
Because he was not blogging it. It wasn't like, oh, he was watching it for. He's like, it was background noise.
I watched it for work when I felt like I needed to tune in to a particular person. So I was not there. I think you know this. It's one of the only times I've not been at an SEC Media Day since I've been on the beat. But for numerous reasons, I was not there, and I didn't feel like I missed much. And that's part of the reason why I wasn't there, because I didn't expect I would miss much. And so I found myself tuning in when I felt like I needed to watch something for something I was writing. But otherwise, no, I didn't have it on. Maybe that's bad to admit it, but I didn't miss anything, right? By Thursday, I was watching the British Open. Monday, I listened to Sankey's State of the Conference, tuned in for a couple coaches, and that was about it. And I think I still probably watch more than the average fan. The event's run its course. It's become more boring than ever. I mean, when Saban steals the show, it says two things. One, you know, Saban is still the ultimate star in the SEC, even though he's not coaching anymore. But two, I think it speaks to the event overall is pretty boring when whatever Nick Saban says as a talking head is the most interesting thing.
Well, I think the big question for me is, was the boring nature or the I don't even know what you would like, just the irrelevant nature, maybe? You know what I mean? Was that by design this year, or is that a byproduct of what you said? Like, we now realize, like, you know, the sport has never been covered more. We now have, you know, if players want to go on social media, like, we don't have to work to get people's thoughts. It's also become just kind of, you know, it's very, it's kind of been Sabanized so much. You know, no one's saying anything really. Or is it, hey, the SEC, which used to, like, want to make this a thing, they're now kind of like, we don't want to make this a thing right now.
I think it's the former. I think the SEC would still sort of like it to be a thing. I mean, it sucks up 4 days of television programming. So, I mean, I think the folks in the league office still would like for it to be a big deal, but it's not. And part of that is because of the decisions folks in the league office have made. I mean, this event was a bigger deal when it was annually hosted in Hoover, Alabama. Now, you know, the world's changed even in the last few years since it's been in Hoover. And yet, I still think the event would command more attention than it does now if they'd never moved it out of Hoover. I mean, the event, from what I understand, was well attended this year, but it was well attended by scribes who cover Texas and Oklahoma, and not necessarily scribes who cover the other 14 teams in the league. I kid you not, there was an exchange between a reporter and Harold Perkins, the star linebacker from LSU, in which a reporter, I'm assuming an Oklahoma-based reporter, asked Harold Perkins if to prepare for his role as an inside linebacker this year, he watched film of Danny Stutzman.
Huh.
And Harold Perkins said, I don't know who Danny Stutzman is. A very unsurprising answer. Most people in our great nation have no clue who Danny Stutzman is. And the reporter informed Harold that Danny Stutzman is a linebacker, a pretty good one, at Oklahoma. And Harold said, yeah, I know the guys on my team, but I don't really know everybody from other teams. And that's, I don't fault Perkins for
no,
that.
No, like, they haven't played them. Like, you know what I mean?
There's absolutely no reason why Harold Perkins should know who Danny Stutzman or any other linebacker at Oklahoma is. But that's sort of was the event in a nutshell. Like, Josh Heupel comes on stage and he gets a bunch of questions about Oklahoma.
Well, right? Now that you bring that up, I'm now angry at the question. Like, if you want,
question,
right? Because if you want to, like, okay, if you want to say, have you been watching anyone to prepare for, like, that's such like the ultimate, like, that's like a, it's either at best, it's a stupid question. At worst, it's like trying to be a gotcha question. It's like, see, like, nobody respects Stutzman. It's like, right. What?
Yeah, I mean, if he was really wanting to know if Perkins was watching film of somebody, just ask him, do you watch film of any right. other linebackers? But to ask him specifically if he watched film of Danny Stutzman, I mean, that just strikes me as you know, an OU blogger who, you know, crawled out of his basement to get a credential to SEC Media Days. And hey, you know, good on him, I guess. And he got a couple questions into to Harold Perkins. I don't know what he's going to do with those answers, but I kind of chuckled at it, and here we are talking on the radio. So I guess to that extent, maybe that OU scribe served his purpose.
All right, so we did get the media voting today. To no one's surprise, Georgia with 165 first place votes. Texas was second at 27. Bama with 12. Ole Miss with 4. Vanderbilt with 2. Both those guys should have their or gals should have their credentials revoked. LSU with 2, South Carolina with 1, also South, whoever did that, that should be, like, we at a certain point, it's just like, yeah, you don't get to do this anymore. Like, you can maybe keep the credential, but you don't get to vote anymore. But we got the predicted order of finish, and we get Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, LSU, Missouri, Oklahoma, A&M, Auburn, Kentucky, Florida, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt. How did you end up? Did you decide how you ended up going with it, or what you ended up doing?
Yeah, and mine reflects very closely what the overall vote was, and I wasn't surprised by the vote much at all. The only thing that surprised me a little bit was just because of the name on the jersey. I thought Tennessee would be 6 and Missouri would be 7, but I actually think this is really quite appropriate for Missouri to be 6 and Tennessee 7. I mean, Missouri clubbed Tennessee over the head last year in Columbia and left no doubt in that game. So I thought that was fair. I thought the top 5 looked exactly how I thought it would, and really how I see the top 5. I mean, I see it as Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, and LSU. Now, the tricky thing is, does Ole Miss finish 3rd because they have a softer schedule than what Alabama does, and probably to a lesser degree than what LSU does? I don't know. I mean, it's like, how do you vote in these things, right? Are you factoring in the schedule? Is it more of like a power rankings of who you think the best teams are? I think they got the 5 best teams in this conference right. Those are the 5 teams that I have making the playoff from the SEC. I've kind of gone back and forth on that. At one time, I had Missouri on the right side of the cut. I have Missouri on the wrong side of the cut now. So now my playoff 5 from the SEC are Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, and LSU. And that's the teams in the top 5 of the rankings. You know, I think you got a couple more that will be in playoff contention, and I think they're appropriately number 6 and 7. In this poll, and that's Missouri and Tennessee. I think, and we've talked about this before, Oklahoma and A&M feel like more long-shot playoff teams. Oklahoma, because the schedule's brutal. A&M, the only reason I would even consider them on the playoff shortlist is because they have a very accommodating schedule. But I sort of draw the line of, like, really serious playoff contenders probably after the top 7, and those are the exact top 7 teams that the media picked. I mean, yeah, there are some stupid votes, like a couple first-place votes for Vanderbilt, but when you have that many people voting,
yeah, it gets watered.
You know, you weed out the extremes, and I actually think this is a pretty fair representation of the conference. And it was actually not that I personally care who's ranked where in the poll, but I thought it was kind of refreshing to see that I think people actually took into account what teams have and not just the name on the jersey. I mean, you know, Florida was down toward the bottom of the conference. They play a brutal schedule. I mean, I think they're looking at like a 6-6, 5-7 type season. But, you know, so it was very appropriate for them to be ranked there. And like I said, it really stood out to me that Missouri was put ahead of Tennessee. And I think that's fair. I mean, teams change year over year, but it's hard to ignore, I mean, what was it, 36-7 or something like that last year in Columbia. So, yeah, I mean, I really think my ballot compared to the way these things, the way this shook out, I mean, it's pretty similar.
The one thing that I keep struggling with, it's like, are we overlooking Alabama?
Yes.
I just feel like they're in a good spot. Now, I will say the flip side would be, every time I do go look at Alabama's schedule, it's like, okay, you can kind of see how they finished 3rd, and they're like you said, they'll be a playoff team, but you can see how they finished 3rd.
Yeah, but I think you're right. Like, they could finish 3rd, but I still think we're overlooking them in the sense that I'm not hearing a ton of chatter about Alabama, and maybe I'm just not looking under the right rocks or in the right places, but in terms of, like, really overwhelming national hype, I mean, you know, the Ole Miss hype train is rumbling down the track. The Texas hype train is rumbling as well. Everybody seems to accept that Georgia, you know, is either a deserving preseason number 1 in the nation or preseason number 2 behind Ohio State. I mean, those 3 teams are sucking up a lot of oxygen. And I feel like Alabama, and also to a certain degree LSU, are sort of lurking in the shadows there of 2 really good teams that I think could land some haymakers this season. I mean, I wouldn't be really surprised if either one of those teams ends up in Atlanta. I feel probably a little bit better about Alabama than I do LSU because of the questions we still have about LSU's defense. But I think we talked before about how LSU's 3 toughest conference games are all at home. So the schedule breaks nicely for them. I still think they're going to be loaded on offense. If you looked at the preseason All-SEC teams that came out today, I mean, there were several LSU players either on the first-team offense or the second-team offense. You know, a few linemen, tight end, wide receiver Kyron Lacy. Like, this is still going to be a really good LSU offense. If they are, if they go from horrible to average on defense, I think they're a playoff team, and I think they could be in contention for Atlanta. So I think both Alabama and LSU are lurking in the shadows as a few other teams suck up all the oxygen. And even Tennessee, I think, is getting some oxygen, too, because of Nico. I mean, everybody is in love with Nico because of his talents, because of what he did against Iowa. I think he's really good. I think he's going to have a big season. I don't go as far as some do, like with Greg McElroy, who's trying to suck up to Volsans, saying he thinks that Nico is going to be a Heisman finalist. Maybe he will. I don't go that far on Nico, but I do think because of Nico, you know, Tennessee's getting itself some preseason flowers here too.
Well, no, to your point, it's like I was looking at the reason why I was saying, are we overlooking Alabama? It's like they had 16 guys. They had more than Georgia on the first, second, and third teams. Now, I mean, we're splitting hairs there, and in the end, like, it's a preseason list, but at the same time, it's like, I think we all kind of acknowledge this is a player sport, and it just feels like we might be overlooking a team that's loaded with players. I wanted to go to your Tennessee point, because to me, with Nico, what it comes down to is, what does Tennessee have at the receiver spot? Because I feel like that has been kind of the key drop-off.
You're right. I mean, I don't think they're as good at wide receiver as they were in the 2022 season. I also think we're putting a lot of stock in a good, not great performance against Iowa. I mean, he was good.
He was solid,
but yeah, I mean, he wasn't Hendon Hooker good against Iowa. A lot of his completions were like underneath stuff. Josh Heupel specializes in those high percentage throws. You want to have a good completion percentage as a quarterback, play for Josh Heupel. Like, he is going to put you in position to complete passes. And to his credit, Nico did that. He also made some plays with his legs, which make a great highlight reel. So he played good against Iowa. I didn't see the Iowa game as like hand the man the Heisman, and I think you're right. I don't think they're as good at wide receiver as they were a couple years ago. You see that reflected, you know, in these preseason all conference teams. They don't have that, you know, they don't have that go-to guy that you feel like either A, can take the top off the defense, like Jalin Hyatt was a couple years ago, or B, that guy on like third and seven, you need someone to sit down 8 yards past the line of scrimmage, you know, 1 yard beyond the sticks, find that hole in the defense, sits down, boom, you hit him, you move the chains. I mean, that was Georgia last year with Carson Beck to Brock Bowers. How many times, you know, on third and five, boom, 7 yard completion to Brock Bowers, moves the chains. I don't see that guy in Tennessee's wide receiver core. I also don't see the Jalin Hyatt that can take off the top of the defense to the degree that he did. I mean, they got some good players. You know, Squirrel White's a solid guy. Brew McCoy is a solid guy. I don't think there's Cedric Tillman and Jalin Hyatt, though. And so, yeah, I think Nico's really good. I do question the supporting cast with Tennessee. I like Tennessee's scheduled draw, but I'm cooling on Tennessee. I'm not cooling on Tennessee as they're going to be terrible, but, like, you know, there is some serious buzz about Tennessee in the playoff, and I am really just cooling on that idea as much as I like the schedule. You go back and look at last season, they played a few ranked opponents. You know, they got embarrassed by Missouri. They lose to Alabama. They lose to Georgia. They lose to Florida. And, you know, I mean, it was in the swamp, but still not a good loss. And then they beat one ranked team. They beat Iowa. Otherwise, that 9-4 record was propped up by a lot of wins against mediocre opponents. And Josh Heupel does that really well. Other than like one random road loss every year that leaves you scratching your head, for the most part, he beats the teams that he's supposed to beat. And that's what I do like about Tennessee this season. There's a lot of games on their schedule that are like, yeah, that's a team Tennessee should beat, and they usually take care of business there. But I don't know, that 9-4 record last year had some holes in it, and I think this roster has some holes in it too.
Well, no, I think you and I talked about it last week. There are some teams where you can flip the losses, like if a play goes differently. But like Tennessee, I mean, I guess you could maybe say the Alabama game, the, you know, that game was closer than 34-20. Mm-hmm. But really, for the most part, all their losses were pretty sound losses. It's funny that you mentioned Tennessee, because if my wife and my dad's listening, like, turn it off. I'm starting to cool on Ole Miss. The love, man. I don't know. Like, I've seen this story before.
I'm starting to cool on them to the extent of, like, it's just gotten... I mean, it's reached a crescendo. I mean, you would think the two front runners for the national championship are Georgia, and Ole Miss is one step behind them. Like, I mean, look, folks, Ole Miss should be a little bit better this year, and they were pretty good last year, but they still lost to Georgia by 35 points, or 38 points, maybe, whatever it was. I think it was 35 points. I mean, it was a no-doubter. An absolute no doubter. So
I mean, I think Georgia scored, like, I think it was like 8 straight possessions.
Yeah, I was at that game. I started writing my column, I think, by the end of the first quarter, if not sooner. I mean, it was one of those, like, well, I know where I'm going with this column. Like, I, you know, I've seen enough to know what my take is here. And I was not moved off that in the next three quarters, right? And so
it was 35, by the way. I think they got a sad field goal.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they're going to be better on the line of scrimmage. I think so. They made some gains there, but they didn't add, like, All-Americans along the offensive and defensive line. They added good players that I think are going to help them. I still am in on Ole Miss when we're talking about them as a playoff team. I think they're going to lose to Georgia, and then they need to get one of two, probably against LSU or Oklahoma, and I think they're going to be in. And they get Oklahoma at home. That's going to be a huge one for them. Because even if you lose to Georgia and LSU, I think Georgia and LSU could be playoff teams. Certainly think Georgia will be, and I think LSU is going to be too. So you could be sitting there with a 10-2 record. Your two losses are to fellow playoff teams. You got to win against Oklahoma. You got the pivotal 10 wins, which I think is going to be kind of make or break in the playoff conversation. I think they can be a playoff team. But I still, if we're talking about them, you know, as a national championship contender, that's where I'm cooling on them. I'm not cooling on another 10-win season for Lane. I think he's got that. I'm cooling on him just as compared to some of this just off-the-chart hype that's out there for them right now.
Yeah, and I guess to your point, like, the same thing about Heupel kind of applies to Kiffin.
Yes.
I threw out 2020 because I just don't count that year. So in the last three seasons, they've been a favorite in 29 games. They're 25-4. Three of the losses were the end of the year 22, where they lost to Arkansas. They lost at Arkansas. They blew the Egg Bowl, and then one of the worst bowl games I've ever sat down and watched, that Texas Tech game.
Yeah, and that's where I kind of fall on them, is they have three games that are really going to challenge them. The other nine, I'd be really surprised.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.